Hey, thank you so much for joining us at our Crosspoint Church podcast. Now, if you're new to our podcast or maybe new to our church in general, we're just a bunch of messed up people who don't have it all together, running after a heavenly leader who loves us and meets us right where we are. We hope this message encourages you, builds your faith, and strengthens your confidence as you continue down this journey of what it means to know and follow Jesus. Enjoy this message.
When you go to Google and type in climate change is, you're going to see different results depending on where you live and the particular things that Google knows about your interests.
That's not by accident. That's a design technique.
What I want people to know is that everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded.
A lot of people think Google's just a search box and Facebook's just a place to see what my friends are doing. What they don't realize is there's entire teams of engineers whose job is to use your psychology against you.
I was the co-inventor of the Facebook-like button.
I was the president of Pinterest.
Google. Twitter. Instagram.
There were meaningful changes happening around the world because of these platforms.
I think we were naive about the flip side of that coin.
We get rewarded by hearts, likes, thumbs up. And we conflate that with value, and we conflate it with truth.
A whole generation is more anxious, more depressed.
I always felt like fundamentally it was a force for good. I don't know if I feel that way anymore.
Facebook discovered that they were able to affect real-world behavior and emotions without ever triggering the user's awareness. They are completely clueless.
Fake news spreads 6 times faster than true news.
We're being bombarded with rumors.
If everyone's entitled to their own facts, there's really no need for people to come together. In fact, there's really no need for people to interact.
We have less control over who we are and what we really believe.
If you want to control the population of your country, there has never been a tool as effective as Facebook.
We built these things and we have a responsibility to change it.
The intention could be, how do we make the world better?
If technology creates mass chaos, loneliness, more polarization, more election hacking, more inability to focus on the real issues, we're toast.
This is checkmate on humanity.
You know, a few years ago, my wife and I had this thing called the Movie Pass, which we love to see movies, and it was a subscription you get every month that allowed you to watch one movie a day. You go to one movie in the theater every single day, and we, on a particular day, had a movie that was something we wanted to see, and it didn't do well in the theater, so we're like, we got to see this tonight because it's not going to be in here very much longer, and this is going to sound like so super spiritual when I tell you what the movie was, but I like this guy. It was a movie about the Apostle Paul, and we talk about him a lot here at Crosspoint. And so we were trying to reserve the movie on our app, and it wouldn't let us reserve the movie. So, you know, we just decided we're going to go to the theater and just show up, say, hey, we got the movie pass, and we'll see this movie. We get to the theater, and the reason that it wasn't showing up and populating in the app is because the projector had broken in that theater, and they had to close it down. And so we're standing there at the box office looking up at all the movies that are showing, and the only one that was within 2 hours of that moment where we were standing there was this movie right here, Ready Player One. And I looked at my wife, and I'm like, Julie, put a pencil in my eye and kill me now. I don't think I can do it. And I'm not into fantasy movies, not into sci-fi. I just don't enjoy that genre. And so she like pleaded with me. She's like, Kurt, please, let's see this. I mean, we plan to be out and go to a movie, and I'm sure it'll be better than we think it is. And so we actually went to this movie. It was back in 2018. And this actually became my favorite movie that year. And one of the reasons is because it was set in a unique setting. It was set in 2045, so about 20, 25 years into the future. It was set in Columbus, Ohio, so in the Midwest here. There's some relatable things, but the context of it was very dark. It was, you know, everything was, the world was just depressed, and everybody was weighted and stressed and exhausted, and And it was unique because every single day people would get up and instead of going to work or going to school the way that we do, you know, today, they would actually go to this cube that everybody had their own cube, and they were stacked in the city, and they would get into this cube, into this space where there's a multi-directional treadmill, and they put on a VR goggle set and a VR suit, and they would basically live their life through, you know, virtual reality. Everything they do, interact with throughout the day, from work to school to relationships, everything was done through virtual reality. And I just remember like stepping back out of that after we saw this movie, and I thought, well, gosh, what? That's only 25 years or so from now. What in the world would cause us to, you know, live that way? And then a couple years later, the pandemic hit, and all of a sudden we're virtual on all these fronts. I'm like, oh, like, so we just got a lot closer to that than perhaps I ever thought we would be. And one of the reasons I love the movie is because it really wrestled with the reality of how do we live in the digital world? How do we live? Because that's just a part of our lives. But also, how do we satisfy the needs that we have for in-person connection and there to be something more than just a virtual digital experience? And that's kind of what that movie is all about. And that's what we're going to be going after this weekend. And so we're going to kind of figure out, okay, what is our relationship with the digital world and screen? So, man, welcome to Crosspoint. Excited to have you guys here. You guys excited this weekend to be tackling this? Man. Tell you what, a lot of energy in the room. If you're here for the first time, we're excited you're here. My name's Kurt, and you've caught us on week 3 of this series, The Burnout Society, where we're trying to opt out of this society, by the way. Not a society we want to be in. And today we're going to be, you know, connecting with this idea of like, what's the role of screens and the digital world in our life? Which, speaking of, we got people tuning in on the other side of a screen. Let's make some noise for those tuning in across our online platform. Excited to have you guys join us. As you can see, I mean, you know, this is a world we live in. We have to figure out how to navigate this. In fact, I saw an article not too long ago, and it kind of made me laugh. I don't know if it'll make you laugh, but it was funny because in light of that experience going to Ready Player One, and then, you know, we had done some other series and topics in like 2018, 19 on how to navigate the digital world, how to manage screen time, how to function in the high achiever culture with all the digital, you know, realities and so on. And then this article came up in March 2020, and it says coronavirus ended the screen time debate. Screens won. I'm like, all right, well, that just got solved right there, because that's really kind of what happened. You know, we realized that when we went through that season, you know, this world is here to stay. And so I want to show you something that is really just kind of a bit of a comparison that helps us, you know, wrap our minds around this. This first picture I want to show you was from 1998, and this is like basketball great Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller fans in the house this weekend. Oh, man. You might remember this game. This was 1998 against the Knicks. This was the game, the iconic game where Reggie went off for 8 points in 9 seconds, brought the Pacers back for a win. And I want you to just like pay attention to how the fans are engaging right here. I mean, check out how, I mean, they're leaning in, right? They're like on the court. I mean, this was like Reggie against Spike Lee is pretty much what that was, and the New York Knicks. You can see Spike Lee right there in the corner. I mean, they're like right there. And so just remember this image right here. And then look at this one. If we fast forward a bit to February 2023, a year ago, this is LeBron James when he set the scoring record for the NBA. And, you know, best player ever to play in the history of the NBA right there. And I know some of you are like, this church is blasphemy. I'm never coming back here. But I want you to take a look. When he set the scoring record, take a look at the difference in this picture right here. Just look at the fans. Notice the difference in the experience. Every single person's got a screen between them and the game. Every single one. And it just shows us the difference of what's taken place in the world over 25 years. Because we experience the world through screens today. And we're surrounded by them. And in fact, one of my favorite places that's increasingly becoming one of my favorite places, Julie and I have done a lot of trips over the last few years, is New York City. Love New York City. We love everything about New York City. We love Broadway. We love, you know, the subway. We love all the iconic places you can visit in one day. We love the diversity. I mean, just so many things about New York City we love. The one thing I really don't love about New York City is Times Square. And if you've ever been there, I mean, there's so much going on. I mean, people are trying to sell you stuff. And you got all these screens everywhere. And people are like walking up half naked. And that's just like the people in our group. That's not even everybody else. And so, but the advertisements on the screens, I just look around and it's like, oh my gosh, it would be awful to live in this environment where you're just surrounded by advertisements coming at you all the time. And then in that moment, you look down and I'm like, oh, but I actually have that in my hands all the time. And you know, all you have to do is recognize that, you know, when you got your phone in your hand, that overwhelming, oversaturated feeling that, I at least feel when I'm in Times Square, I'm like, that happens all the time. That's sitting in my pocket. And it's in front of my face all the time, creating distraction and, you know, draining me and stressing me out, you know, at times with things coming in. And so this is just something we have to wrestle with. And we're going to dive into how this contributes to our burnout. In fact, I think if Jesus were here today, I think, you know, if he were like doing a 2024, you know, sermon on the side of a mountain, like Sermon on the Mount 2024, I think, you know, if we were there, we'd be having our devices and we'd be like, hey, you know, we'd be like, hey, Jesus, do another one of those miracles so we can capture it. And you're like, quit with all the like all the conviction and all that, but like, how about another miracle so we can like screenshot and say we're here? We, you know, because this is what we do. And I think Jesus would probably be like, perhaps we need to have a conversation about this thing that's always between you and me. And not necessarily just between him and us, but this thing that gets in the way of us really experiencing life to the fullest extent that he created for us. So just a couple disclaimers as we dive into this weekend. As far as we know, Jesus did not have any teachings on technology in the iPhone, just so you know, all right? He didn't have like the Ten Commandments on how to handle Tinder. He didn't have this like, hey, you've been down, and if I swipe left, everybody's guilty. I mean, he has none of that, all right? I really don't believe at all that the locusts in the Old Testament were the original angry birds. Some people are like, oh, that was the beginning. No, I don't think that. Moses did walk down the mountain with some tablets, but we don't really know what brand they were, so we don't even know that. So, you know, so the Bible doesn't really say a lot about technology or anything, and I'm not going to try to make it say something just because we wanted to say that. And then the second thing that I think is important is this is a no judgment, you know, zone right here. All right, so this is kind of a judgment-free zone. Because, I mean, listen, if you look around at Crosspoint, we got screens everywhere, right? You got them in front of you. I got two in front of me. I got a third one on the wall. If you walk into the Commons, there's screens everywhere. So, I mean, this is a part of our world. Phones, you know, are not bad. Screens are not bad. All right, we're not going to be like, burn your phone like we did, you know, our CDs back in the 90s. Burn your CDs, you know. And some of you are like, what is a CD? That's a history lesson for another time. And so, you know, what are we talking about today? Well, we could talk really for the rest of the year about this topic. And if we had more time, we would even get into the reality that you're not even a customer in this for the most part. I mean, you're probably more of the product. In fact, if you want some fun homework, it's one of our next steps this weekend. Maybe check out that documentary that we showed the trailer to, you know, to you on a moment ago. That's The Social Dilemma. It's on Netflix. And that could just be one of your next steps this week. And one of the best quotes from that documentary is this. It says, if you're not paying for the product, then you are the product. You are the product. And, you know, so we're going to talk a bit about that. We're going to talk a bit about how, you know, the promise of the internet actually was to bring people together. And yet, statistically, all it really shows is that it doesn't really foster diversity or coming together. It actually fosters division, and it leads to a lot of extremism and a lot of extreme thoughts. We could talk about how politics get involved in all this and how, you know, you and I, we don't get online to necessarily get involved in politics. And yet, you know, you get online to connect with your family, or you get online to do some research, and yet you can't escape the political noise. And you know, and then we have to ask the question, why are 75% of the political ads, you know, posted by 6% of the users? And then, of course, there's the whole AI conversation, and some of you are like, I like AI, and others are like, I think AI is actually one of the worst things in the world. I'm convinced one of the worst things in the world is, you know, when you get into a group chat and an Android joins, right, and it goes green. And some of you are like, oh, Kurt, you're not my friend anymore. That's the real problem. Yeah, you guys agree with me on that, don't you? You know, here's the thing, though. What we're going to look at today is the screens debate is over, all right? That's the screens won, all right? We're in this world today. And so the question I really want us to dig into is, how do we make sure we're living well in this? How do we make sure in the hybrid world that we live in, how do we figure out and know how to come up for air when we need to come up for air? How do we make sure we have the peace that God designed for us and we're not just constantly driven by all this? And how do we help our students navigate this? And at the same time, I don't want to overlook the positive parts of social media and internet and screens and devices. I mean, so many positive things in terms of connectivity. Some of you work in social media or you're just really big in influencing and you're doing good work. You're trying to encourage people. Keep that up. There's so many good things. And then, you know, like even with our kids, like my daughters, they love it. And you know, they'll come to me. Maybe if you're a parent or a grandparent or, you know, uncle or aunt or something, you might have these conversations. But like one of my daughters will come and she'll just be like, "Dad, would you please do a TikTok with me?" And the answer is always no. I mean, it's like, no, it's just not my thing. And she'll like plead and just, "Hey, Dad, I mean, it's just a short little video. You don't have to do much. You just have to say this." And she will wear me slap down. And finally, I will cave in and I'll end up doing something ridiculous like this right here.
"I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams I have a man. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all.
I mean, so embarrassing, right? Like that, I always want to put myself out there at my expense just so you could get a laugh or two. But you know, it creates connection, right? And then she doesn't relent on it. She just keeps going. She's like, "Dad, just one more, just one more." I'm like, "I'm not doing it." And then this happens.
Standing in a crowded room and I can't see your face. Put your arms around me, tell me everything's okay.
Anybody else do this with your kids? Anybody? Okay. I mean, because I am so bad. I'm so awkward. So awkward. But, you know, but it creates connection. It allows me to get a bit into her world. And you know, here's the reality on this. We have become very, very attached to our phones, right? I mean, I saw a number of stats recently. One was that 75% of Americans can actually reach their phone without ever moving their feet 24 hours a day. Just think about that for a moment. I got a lot of questions about that. Like, how does that work, like, in the bathroom? Like how does that work when you're... A lot of questions. 19-year-olds were recently surveyed, and they were asked, "Would you rather have a broken finger or a broken screen?" And you know what the answer was, right? Like, "Well, I got 9 other fingers. I certainly can do without one," right? And so, like, it's that big of a deal. Gen Zers and, you know, over half of them self-report, get this, spending over 10 hours a day on their devices. And the irony of that is the app that most of them are on is that one right there I just showed you. I mean, it actually has the name of what's happening. TikTok, you're wasting time. You know, it's like it's telling you what's happening. Millennials, you know, Gen Xers, that's myself. We're not, you know, we're not absolved from this either. I mean, if I'm honest, admit that there's moments where I feel like Paul Rudd's character in, you know, This Is 40, where I'm going to the bathroom just to get a little scroll time in, right? Like, I'm like, "Oh, let me just play a game in here." And this is why today they're saying that scrolling is the new smoking, all right? Because you know how nice it is to get out of a meeting and just like scroll for a bit, just like, you know, have a moment to like just, you know, scroll. It's not necessarily, you know, good for us, but we like doing this. And of course, none of this actually is happening by accident. In fact, Sean Parker, who was one of the original creators of Facebook, he actually, in the movie The Social Network, a different movie, this was a 2010 movie on the makings of Facebook, he was played by Justin Timberlake, by the way, in the movie. He's now kind of done a 180 on this. He's like, "You know, I just don't know." He has some regrets about this. And here's something he said recently in an interview. He said, "God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains." He says, the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, was all about how do we consume as much of your time and your conscious attention as possible. Just reread that last line there. How do we consume as much of your time and your conscious attention as possible? And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because, you know, someone likes or comments on a post or whatever, and that's going to get you to contribute more content, and that's going to get you more likes and more comments. It's a social validation feedback loop, exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with because we're exploiting the vulnerability of the human psychology. Welcome to the Burnout Society. This is in some cases why we feel the way that we do. And I just think it's wild that the developers who actually put so much of this in motion, you know, people like, you know, Sean Parker who designed this, he's saying with every click, with every swipe, we're actually trying to get you to a place where you, if you don't tap it again, you experience things like anxiety and insomnia and irritability and depression and craving and fatigue. They're actually trying to get us to feel those things so we continue to go back to it. And if you could describe the Burnout Society in 6 words, I think this is a good description of it right here. In fact, I want us to take a look at another clip from the Social Dilemma. And this talks a bit about the dilemma of how this is actually playing into our mental health and specifically teenagers, but I think it actually affects all of us. Take a look at this.
They can't stop looking at social media.
Their brains have changed.
They become addicted.
And there's something very dangerous about that.
The number one problem, the number one psychiatric disorder among teenagers is anxiety. Typically, it's anxiety about needing to check in with social media.
There's another study that looked at fear of missing out, and it looked at kids who have high anxiety around missing out. Even though social media makes them more anxious, makes them more worried about missing out, they can't stop looking at it. That prefrontal cortex hasn't developed enough for them to be able to put it down, to say to themselves, it's not making me feel good.
The prefrontal cortex, this area of the brain that is involved in our cognitive control, our ability to process and direct our attention based on our goals, is the last part of our brain to develop.
This doesn't get completely myelinated until you're in your mid to late 20s.
So kids are getting these tools right when they have the least capability of actually controlling their behavior.
I think we can confidently say that it's changing the way that teens interact with each other, with peers, with the world, and that those changes in interactions lead to sort of changes in behaviors, changes in psychiatric and sort of mental health.
We should not be surprised. And it's not just because the culture changed. It's because their brains have changed.
They also get trained in instant gratification by these devices. And there's something very dangerous about that because in real life, we don't get everything that we want instantly.
They are bombarding our teenagers and our young adults with so much that they become addicted to the continuous input of stimulus and information.
We know that there are many activities that are critical for our development. Face-to-face communication, physical activities, exposure to nature, and sleep. I would say that all of these are being threatened in some way by increasing access to information technology.
I think parents are in a really tough situation right now. I think because this tech has negative effects, they have to balance between trying to protect their kids, but also, let's face it, there's tremendous social pressure to use technology. And it's also incredibly important that children are technically literate. And I think there need to be more resources that help them make those decisions. And frankly, the companies need to be partially responsible, largely responsible, for ensuring that the use of these products is responsible.
You know, I don't think it's just teenagers. I mean, I think we all feel the effects of this. You know, again, this list, anxiety, insomnia, irritability, depression, craving, fatigue. You know, could it be that our society is living in a state of digital withdrawal and we don't even know it? We don't even know it because, you know, so much of these symptoms are showing up in our life. I think what's fascinating about this is, you know, anxiety is a symptom. You know, it's a symptom of our body trying to tell us something. You know, depression is actually a symptom. People used to think that depression was solely just a chemical imbalance in the brain, And in 1978, there was a guy by the name of George Brown, and he actually said, you know, that just doesn't feel right to me. I think there's more to it than this. And so what George Brown discovered was that depression wasn't just caused by a chemical imbalance. He said it's actually caused by things we experience. There's traumatic events, there's toxic lifestyles that we can begin to live, and those events, that toxicity and that trauma that we experience, we have a hard time breaking away from the hold of that in our lives. And what it does is it actually changes the brain's chemistry. And so it's not just an imbalance of the brain, but it's actually these events, these traumatic events and this toxic lifestyle that merged with, you know, the way it changes our brain that actually leads at times to depression. In fact, it used to be this kind of like, well, if you have depression, there's just something wrong with you. And you know, that's not it at all. George Brown was basically saying, you know, depression doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It's trying to tell you that there's something not right in your environment. That there's something wrong in our orbit. And there was another guy that came along a little more recently. And this is a guy by the name of Johann Hari, and he basically said, you know, there's kind of 9 true causes of depression. And 7 or 8 of them, it's interesting, are actually, you know, connected socially. And so if you could kind of sum up his findings in a couple words, you know, here's kind of what he kind of boiled it down to. He said, you know, depression basically equals disconnection. All right, when we experience these things, that this trauma, these moments that maybe we have some toxic ways that we're living, it actually triggers something, and a lot of that has to do with disconnection. And he listed actually the 9 causes for depression and this disconnection. In fact, here's what he said. He says this disconnection comes from disconnection from meaningful work, disconnection from other people, disconnection from meaningful values, disconnection from childhood trauma, and there's an asterisk next to that one because that one's kind of starred because the disconnection happens there that if you had something traumatic happen in earlier in your life, it actually creates a disconnection in you, a void because of that trauma. He said it creates when there's a disconnection from, you know, status and respect, disconnection from nature, the natural world. We just heard that in the video. Disconnection from a hopeful future and a secure future. And so he also went on to say there's a couple other factors that play into this as well, one being genes. He said, you know, 37% of depression is, you know, connected to is heredity. It's based in your genes. And that doesn't mean that if your mom or your dad had depression that you're automatically going to have depression. What it means is if you experience some kind of trauma, if you, you know, kind of take on a toxic lifestyle, then 37% of people that are in those two camps are likely going to experience a depression. And so the other kind of factor, he said, is neuroplasticity, which you can get all nerded out on neuroplasticity. It's a really cool thing. But, you know, the bottom line is basically your brain changes based on your thoughts. Now, why am I telling you all this? What's the point of all this? The point is we have a device in our hands almost all the time that promises connectivity, and yet it's making us more disconnected than perhaps we've ever been. And it contributes even to our disconnection from other people. In fact, I recently saw a statistic that said that basically when you are lonely, the effects on your body are similar to experiencing some kind of physical attack. It contributes to disconnection, you know, with meaningful value. And we talked about this last week, and we talked about how advertising basically says, hey, you're not enough. You need our product in order to be enough. And it creates disconnection due to childhood trauma. Here's what's interesting. Did you realize the word Facebook shows up in 66% of all divorce papers across the United States of America? And what that means is that, you know, if you have kids, you might be carrying around in your pocket an app that actually could contribute to the childhood trauma of your children. There's a disconnection from status and, you know, respect. I mean, that never happens on the internet, right? Everybody's so respectful when you're in a chat room. It always goes so well. You know, there's a disconnection with nature, with the natural world. That's something the pharmaceutical companies can't, you know, prescribe anything on. They don't have a solution to that. There's a disconnection in terms of just hopeful and having a secure future. In fact, I heard just this week on the radio, I was listening to somebody that had some really meaningful insight. He plays a lot of the music from the 70s, 80s, and today. And he said there's a connection between gratitude and not feeling bored, because when you have gratitude, you feel more of a sense that you're tied into hopeful and purposeful things. And I'm like, wow, almost like he was listening to what we were talking about last weekend. And so, you know, there's just something that happens, you know, when we're about purpose. You know, you could almost argue, as we think about all this stuff, that to be disconnected from these things actually leads us to be disconnected from our Creator and disconnected from God. I mean, because in a real sense, I mean, it really puts a barrier between us and us living the fullness of what God created us for. One more article. I want to share one more thing with you, and then we're going to kind of turn the page here and look at a couple things God, you know, gives us some tools on for this. This was an article in The Atlantic, and it says, "Have smartphones destroyed a generation?" I just want to read you a bit of this, and then we're going to get to a bit of happier waters. Here's what they said. "You might expect that teens spend so much time in these new digital spaces because it makes them happy. But most data suggests that it does not. The results could not be clearer. Teens who spend more time than average on screen activities are likely to be unhappy, and those who spend more time than average on non-screen activities are more likely to be happy. There's not a single exception." Pay attention to that phrase right there. Look at that. "There is not a single exception. All screen activities are linked to less happiness, and non-screen activities are linked to more happiness." They go on, they say, "The more time teens spend looking at screens, the more likely they're to report symptoms of depression. Since 2007, that was the year the iPhone came out, the homicide rate among teens has actually declined, but the suicide rate has increased. In 2011, for the first time in 24 years, the teen suicide rate was higher than the teen homicide rate." Man, this just begs a really interesting kind of observation and question right here. Why is it today, more than any other time in the history of our world, that teenagers, the person they hate the most, is themselves? Article goes on. It says, "If you were to give advice for a happy adolescence based on this survey, it would be straightforward. Put down the phone, turn off the laptop, do something, anything that does not involve a screen." I think we all know that. I think that none of that's new news. I think the question is, can we do that? And so in the spirit of like trying to help us, it's okay, what are some of the ways that we can work through this and really, you know, operate to, you know, get the best out of life and yet take advantage of technology? I want to take a look at one verse from the New Testament. This comes from the Apostle Paul, and he's instructing people on how, what God's like heart for people who are following him and really his whole creation is. And here's what he says. He says, "I have the right to do anything, but you say not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but I will not be mastered by anything." And so Paul's writing this in the context, in this case, of relationships and sexuality. All right, again, so I'm not trying to make this into something that it's not. He's not necessarily talking about technology, but I think this verse could apply to any situation, you know, whether it be money, whether it be, you know, substances, whether it be technology. Certainly applies to technology right here. And so I want to break this down for us a bit. He first says, "I have the right to do anything, you say, but not everything is beneficial." What does that mean? What he means by this, in other words, he's saying there are things that I could say yes to, and it's not like a right or wrong thing. It's not like, well, God says, hey, this is the right thing, this is the wrong thing. He says, no, you actually have options. But it would actually be better if I say no to it. I don't know how many times you bump into moments like this in your life where you're like, hey, I totally can do this. There's nothing wrong with this, but I think it's just better that I don't. That's what he's saying right here. And then he goes on, he says, "I have the right to do anything, but I will not be mastered by anything." All right, so there are things probably in your life like there are in my life where you can say yes to them, all right? But the thing is, if you say yes enough times to them, you're going to develop a trend where it's going to be hard to ever say no to them. For instance, one of the things I think we can all connect with is, why is it that we wake up every single morning and the first thing we do is we reach for what? Our device. And then we begin to scroll. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not like Paul's saying, hey, don't ever do that. God doesn't have any input on that. He just says, hey, you got to ask the question, like, you know, if I just say yes and do that all the time, then it's going to become really hard to break that pattern and say no. I think that's why Thoreau actually said, we've become tools to our tools. And so what the Apostle Paul is telling us right here, he's saying, hey, look, this isn't about right or wrong. All right, you know, we get so caught up in right and wrong. Christians are really good saying, ah, this is right, that's wrong. Everybody, you're right, you're wrong. You know, that's not the narrative right here. All right, I could hammer out, this is right, this is wrong. That would sound so religious on this topic. I don't know that any of us are interested in religiosity, but we do have a deep spirituality that we're trying to say, okay, how do I experience more of that? And see, here's the reality. In the burnout society, there are no limits. There are no limits. And so this conversation is about what's wise right here. This is about what's the wisdom here. And Paul is giving us an amazing gift in this little verse right here. What he's saying, and here's the thing, maybe technology is not your deal. Maybe you're like, I don't really struggle with that. I don't have a bad relationship there. But this could apply to whatever gray area is there for you. Meaning Paul gives us one of the most amazingly clear templates right here to evaluate all the gray areas in our life. And he says, basically, there's two thoughts. He says, you know, is it beneficial and are you being mastered by it? That's what this verse says right here. So every time you run into something that you're like, ah, oh, gosh, this doesn't seem real clear. It's kind of gray. I'm trying to figure out, can I? Should I? Should I stop doing this? Am I in too far? Should I pull back? He just says, you know, these two questions right here. Is it beneficial and is it mastered? So these are the two questions I want us to kind of think through, and then we're going to wrap up. All right. And so as you think about what your life looks like in relationship with, you know, screens, with the digital world, with social media, I want you to ask yourself this first question right here. Is it beneficial? Is what I'm doing and the way I'm operating, is it beneficial to me right now? All right, you have the right to do anything, right? God's not like, hey, this is right, that's wrong. This is one of those gray areas. And listen, we're not going to be like, hey, we want to monitor your screen time. That's not our job. You might want to do that. That's totally cool. But you have the right to do anything. The question is, what's beneficial for you right now? In fact, one of the questions that Abby, you know, helped us process through in the first week of this series was, you know, what is it that you want? And I think that's just a fascinating question because we rarely, you know, spend a little, just any time at all saying, okay, what is it that I really do want? I think that'd be a good question right here. I mean, as we think about our relationships with the digital world and technology and screens, you know, what do we want? Is it leading us to the life that we want? You know, is it leading you to the family that you want? Is it leading you to the relationships that you want? Is it leading you to the marriage that you want? Is it leading you to the kids that you want? And if our current relationship with technology, if it doesn't have the boundaries that are leading us to what we want, if it's not working for us, then, you know, what could we do? You know, what might we need to change? Now, something I'm really excited about, you're going to receive this when you walk out today. And for those of you tuning in online, there's a button where you can download this right next to the stream today. You're going to receive a little prevention plan right here. This is the Burnout Society Prevention Plan. And this is going to be something that has all the subjects we're talking about. Last week, we talked about finances. This week, you know, the digital world. Next week, we're going to talk about how do we rest and do we have the ability to stop and rest. And it gives you a place to kind of ask, okay, what's working for me? What's not working for me? What are some of the changes I need to make? This might be a really good thing to work through with your roommates if you know, live with a group of people or with your partner, your spouse, or your family. It might be a good family conversation to just say, okay, what does it look like for us to map out a plan, because if we're not getting to the end result we want, what are the changes we need to make? And if you're looking for some additional resources, a great book called The TechWise Family, and this is by Andy Crouch. And if you have kids or grandkids and you just want to dig a bit deeper into this with some very practical tools, we've actually got this book available in the Commons today. You can pick it up at Connection Points, $10, and there's a little QR code so you can just scan it, pay for it, take it with you. But there's some great questions, and it would give you a really good template to work through some of this and say, okay, what does this look like for our family? In fact, one of the great quotes out of this book, Andy says this. He says, every single one of us need to pause from your phone 1 hour a day, 1 day a week, and 1 week a year. You might say, well, how does that work? Well, that might be a vacation where you just totally disconnect, you know, for that particular week. For me, when it comes to, you know, 1 day a week, my Fridays are that day oftentimes. Sometimes you can't get the whole Friday, but Friday's my day off. And so I'm at home and I really try to stay totally unengaged from work, and I'll put my phone on the charger. I don't carry it around in my pocket that day. Sometimes my kids are like, you know, Dad, we couldn't get a hold of you. I'm like, I am so sorry. I wasn't trying to not be connected to you. I'm just trying to not be available to the rest of the world. And so, you know, it was really difficult at first because I would always be reaching for it, and what if somebody needs me? And I've began to discover that's more about me than everybody else. But now it's amazing. And one of the things I've discovered is that free day is actually a lot longer than it used to be because I'm not taking up all kinds of time. I'm actually reclaiming time that I used to spend, you know, always responding to everything coming at me. Perhaps that's a plan you could adopt. One reason perhaps might be worth trying this is, you know, the problem isn't that you have access to the web and social media and all those things. It's not your access that you have. The problem is all of that has access to you. And so developing a plan to where I don't have to be on all the time. Maybe your plan could be, you know, something like doing something with your devices at times, having a device-free dinner, a device-free party, and, you know, and then you have to ask the existential question, you know, if we're there at the party and we don't get a selfie, did it really happen, right? Like, whew. Did it happen if I didn't record it? How about you do the research and let us know, all right? Let us know how that comes out for you. In-person interaction, we heard that in one of the interviews a few minutes ago. This is a whole thing, right? Post-COVID, this is hard for some of us. You know, we're like, I know, I can choose the exact emoji if I'm texting. You know, I know exactly what emoji tells how I feel. But in person, man, I felt like Ricky Bobby at times. Like, I don't know what to do with my hands, right? We're like, ooh, I get stuck. I reach for my phone. I don't know what to do. And so we sometimes, you know, it's just awkward. But this is such a helpful thing for us, you know, doing, you know, interfacing face-to-face. And for parents, one of the questions would be really helpful for parents, and this is kind of a painful question, but how, you know, how do we make sure that our kids are more important to us than what's going on our device? And I say that because if I'm honest and we're honest, and this is horrible, but I mean, I've been there, you've probably been there, where there's been moments where I felt like my kids felt like, you know, they were like a distraction to what I was doing on my device. I don't want that. And so is it beneficial? That's the first question that I think would be well helpful for us to process. The second one, are you being mastered by it? This is what Paul says. Are you being mastered by it? One of the research projects that's been shown over and over on this is that our phones are our number one medicator. Our phones are our number one medicator. And it doesn't matter if you're 17 or 27 or 47 or 67 or 87. If we're honest, one of the number one medications that we reach for when we just feel like, gosh, I need a little hit right now, is our device. And here's what a medicator is. Let me just define a medicator. A medicator is anything we reach for to turn up a feeling we want more of or to turn down a feeling we want less of. All right, now, medicators, just to be clear, are not actual medications, right? So if you're on a medication, perhaps a doctor's prescribed, like that's, don't, you know, you need to keep doing that. Instead, medicators in this term right here are things we turn to when we feel a bit, disturbed, distracted, or perhaps we're in need of a distraction. We say, okay, I need something to take my mind off this. Medicators are external things we reach for to address internal things that we're feeling. And we all have a medicine of choice. We all have a medicator of choice that we reach to, right? When the stressors hit in our lives. But one of the things we know about medication is that, you know, there's often, when there's misuse and abuse, there's side effects. And one of the side effects of, you know, medicators is that not all medicators become addictions, but every single addiction starts with a medicator. And so this is, in fact, one of the reasons, you know, we fight really hard to keep Crosspoint as a place, you know, where it's okay not to have it all together. Where we can be like, hey, we can be real, we can talk transparently. And because, you know, I realize, I mean, this is a no judgment zone for those who have addictions. I've had addictions in my life. And I know that when you have an addiction, you didn't purposely choose that. What's going on is there's something internally going on. And there's disconnection that you're feeling, and you're reaching for certain things. And maybe somebody told you, hey, if you do this, or if you go after that, it might work. And you did that, and it actually didn't work for you. And one of the things I've discovered is that anytime you turn a tool into a god, it becomes an idol. And there's all kinds of things that are not really helpful about that, but perhaps the biggest problem is that idols can't actually address the core problem. They can't actually heal you. And so, you know, when we talk about medicators, if we put this list up again, these disconnections that we feel, I mean, if you're here today and you're struggling, you're exhausted, maybe even struggling with some anxiety and depression, you probably can look at that list and pretty quickly go, oh, I can point out the thing that I'm feeling a disconnection on. All right, you can probably spot your disconnection pretty quickly, that thing you're struggling with. And you know, maybe some of it happened when you were much younger. Maybe there's some childhood trauma and, you know, that's still there. I want to tell you, no medicator that you can come up with can ever possibly repair the disconnection. I mean, alcohol can't do it, pornography can't do it, our phones can't do it. I mean, they can mask it, they can numb it, they can, you know, kind of make it go away for a short time, but it can't actually heal it. And the good news is, you know, this is where the person of Jesus actually comes in, because, you know, what we celebrated a few weeks ago at Easter, Jesus actually brings a power and he brings a grace because of what he did on the cross that allows us to actually get a healing in some of those places where we need it the most. And he can repair those disconnections, he can restore, and he can redeem, and he can bring the dead, dry places where we feel the disconnection back to life. And I think that's what he wants to do with us. And so I want you to go ahead and stand. I want to pray for us. I want to invite you to pray with me. And I don't know what your relationship with Jesus is. I know for some of us, maybe we're following Jesus and there's just some things that are getting in the way. And we need to say, okay, what's my relationship? What are some of the steps I need to take? Others of us, maybe you're here trying to reestablish that connection with Jesus. And you being here is just that expression. You know, he's the one that actually can, you know, address and bring healing to the core of some of the things. And so perhaps today's the day to just say, okay, Jesus, I want that. I want to go that direction. Let's pray together. God, thank you for these words that Paul gives us that help us just, you know, say, hey, is this beneficial? Is it mastering me? I want to confess to you all the times I've run after so many things to repair the pain in my life. I think it's because I'm a fixer. I think it's because I think it will solve it. And yet I just confess to you right now and repent to you of the times where I haven't gone to you. I've gone to other things instead. This is our moment right now for us to tell you that we're turning to you instead, that perhaps we've gone after those things, but we want to begin to run in your direction, maybe for the first time. Maybe we just need some reorienting. I pray that you help us to know what to do, because we want that joy, that comes in a relationship with you. So would you lead us into that today? And so we pray these things, Jesus, according to your character and your power. Amen.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Take a moment to follow our podcast on your preferred platform and be sure to download our app to stay informed on everything happening here at CrossPoint. And if you like what you heard today, don't hesitate to share it with a friend that might need to hear it too.